This podcast contains mature themes and situations. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, everybody. This is Evo Terra, co-founder of PatioBooks.com and chief motivator for PG Holyfield to get another episode done, damn it. You're listening to episode 11 of Murder at Avedon Hill with PG Holyfield. Always wanted to do that.
Welcome to the podcast presentation of Murder at Avedon Hill, The Chronicles of Aramis Cragan, written and produced by P.G. Holyfield. Welcome back. This is another long episode with a lot of guest voices, so let's get right to it. We're returning to Avedon Manor, so we get to meet more of the staff. I want to thank all of the voice talent in today's episode, including the return of Billy Flynn from Geek Label Radio as the Manor's butler, Blake Weathertop, Chris Miller of Patio Books and the Nano Monkeys as Lord Avedon, John Smar as the Manor's chef, Roland, and Indiana Jim as Richard Avedon, the oldest son of Lord Avedon. Our new voices for this week: first, we have Mistress Jet from The Jet Show, reading the part of Allie Moore. Now, last week, I posted about our next guest voice, none other than Natalie Metzger, the wonderful artist that created Vampire Hunting, a great piece of art that recreates a scene from an upcoming episode of Murder at Avedon Hill. Please visit the website for a look at that and for links to all of the websites associated with today's cast. Natalie is playing the part of Brianna Ray, who along with Allie Moore are the two maids at the manor. And last but not least, we have Dickie from the Stealth Geek podcast reading the part of Lee Nallon. Again, thanks to all of the guest voices on today's podcast. And now, on to the show. Until next time, thanks for listening. Previously on Murder at Avedon Hill. Gloria shook her hands.
No, we'll go this way.
She pointed to a tunnel entrance opposite where they had entered the huge cavern.
Lady Platt, we shouldn't do that.
Gloria waved him off.
I need you to help me to my house, Kel. I cannot climb the ladder alone. And I need these gentlemen to get to their work as quickly as possible.
He wanted to see Greta about something, and I guess Blake had been instructed to turn him away.
Talik wanted to see Greta, or was it your father, about something?
If you want to get something to my father, you first have to get it past Greta. Had, I mean.
Sarah wore a dress that was both elegant and revealing at the same time. Her fire-red hair flowed around her neck and fell both in front of and behind her shoulders. Aramis found himself staring at her face, attempting to find someone or something to compare it to, but it was incomparable. There was a representation of one of the avatars of Aruna at a temple that came to mind, but it still was not Sarah Tremaine. Miss Tremaine, where were you the night Greta Platt was killed? Sarah stopped smiling, but her face was still radiant.
Oh my. Do you already believe I was involved somehow?
Aaron was suddenly aware of how dirty he felt. He ran his fingers through his hair in an attempt to straighten it. Oh no, Miss Tremaine, we just need to ask this of everyone, to clear everyone we can up front.
I was here. Alone, I'm afraid. I live and work out of this building. I ate an early dinner at the inn. But as I understand it, Greta was killed later in the evening. I have no one that can vouch for my presence here, I'm afraid.
If you can think of anything, anything at all, please call on me. Us.
Oh, I will. And if you need anything, Sir Aaron, I'm here for you as well.
The blacksmith, unlike the smithy itself, was unlike any he had met before. Herjar had outworld blood in him. Constable Lewis wrote you were here the night Greta Platt was murdered.
Yeah, working on a sword for Lord Avedon. He's going to give it to his son Richard at some sort of party.
Can someone confirm you were here that night?
Confirm? I have an apprentice, Aldous Wank. He was here part of the night, but not all of it. I didn't do it, but I can't prove I didn't do it other than by telling you I didn't do it.
Herjar leaned forward for emphasis.
I didn't do it.
Kel knows more about these types of tools, but this is what it made me think of.
May I see it for a moment? Alex de Weirin passed the fork to Aramis. He took out his notebook and opened it to a blank page, and then pressed the three points of the fork against the page and used his pen to mark the distance between them. Satisfied, Aramis handed the fork back to the shopkeeper. We need to speak to all of the manor help. And the other children? John was easy enough to talk to, and we did not seem to upset him at all. Hopefully we can arrange meetings with the other Avedon children without offending Lord Avedon. Aaron looked up at the sky. The sun is beginning to set. Aramis smelled the air around them. Maybe Avedon Hill has more of a nightlife. Aaron smirked to himself. I doubt it. Episode 11 of Murder at Avedon Hill. Chapter 11. The Manor Revisited. The Icon of Treg, the Child of Pain. Treg turned his eyes from Cairn and walked through the tears in the fabric. There he was met by the Torim, and they called him Father. The Lay of Blame. Aramis Cragan desired to make one more stop before the sun crossed its threshold and day became night. He and Aaron hurried back to the northeast, again passing the town's graveyard. Aramis spied an empty makeshift tent Father Joris must have kept in the cemetery. Father Joris must be at home preparing for tonight's graveyard vigil. Aaron Pertee still massaged his temples in an attempt to lessen the pounding behind his eyes. Whatever spell Sarah Tremaine had cast in her shop had lost its hold on Aaron, but its after-effects had left him with a clear but aching head. He glanced over to his mentor and attempted unsuccessfully to not be jealous of Aramis's apparent immunity to Sarah Tremaine's wiles. I should have begun my studies with the Aaronic Order when I was 10. They arrived at the manor without incident. They'd expected to meet a constable at the manor gate, but Lord Avedon had apparently given them leave to resume their normal duties. Once inside the door of the mansion, they again were greeted by Blake Weathertop, Lord Avedon's butler.
Welcome back, sirs.
His voice was tinged with only slightly veiled sarcasm. Aramis bowed his head. Blake, we have a request. The butler nodded.
Lord Avedon asked me to give you whatever you might need. What is it that you require?
The monk pulled out his notebook and opened it. We need to speak to Lord Avedon's manor help as a group.
Help. Do you mean the staff?
Staff, yes. My apologies. If you could gather the staff in the Grand Hall, it will only take us a short time to ask her questions.
Understand me, Sir Aramis. I am the butler of Avedon Manor. Like the Platt family, my family has served Lord Avedon for generations. I am not simply part of the staff. However, I will be glad to gather them in the Grand Hall for you.
Blake Weathertop turned on his heel and left them standing in the entry hall. Aaron leaned over Aramis's shoulder. He doesn't like us very much. I have come to the conclusion that Blake Weathertop does not like anyone very much. The two men followed the path they had taken earlier that day and soon found themselves in the Grand Hall of the Manor. Lord Avedon happened to be walking through the hall when they arrived and approached them near the elaborate table in the center of the room.
Gentlemen, do you have news already?
Aramis smiled but shook his head no. Not yet, Lord Avedon. You have already heard about Greta's missing corpse. We will not speculate on what happened there, although I still have my doubts about this being a vampire killing. Lord Avedon began pacing in front of the two men. He was clearly agitated.
What if I just have constables go through the town, tearing down doors and searching every home?
I am not sure that would be a wise choice, Lord Avedon. Just because Greta's corpse has been stolen does not mean that it is going to be found in or around someone's home. Either it was a vampire killing, and she has become one of the undead, or someone is taking great steps to make it look that way. Lord Avedon stopped pacing and faced Aramis directly.
No, it wasn't a vampire killing. I'm sure of it. You're right. Searching homes is not the answer.
Aramis reached out and touched Lord Avedon's arm. My lord, we are learning more about Greta by the moment. I took the liberty of asking Blake to gather the manor staff here. If you want to stay here while we question them, I understand. Avedon looked around at nothing in particular.
No, I shouldn't be here. Maybe they will feel more comfortable with me not here. In any case, I am tired, very tired. I will retire for the night. Please have dinner here after you are done with the staff. Chef Roland will take care of you.
Aramis nodded in appreciation. Actually, Aaron and I will be eating at the inn. Talag Bor has promised us Ovarian whitetail this evening.
Ah, yes. That is the innkeeper's specialty. Please come back tomorrow and report on your progress.
At this moment, Blake entered the Grand Hall with several others. Everyone was dressed in white. Lord Avedon grabbed the monk by the shoulder.
They disturbed consecrated ground, stole her from us. Don't let me down, Aramis Cragan.
Lord Avedon turned away from Aramis and the staff, while Aramis watched the distraught Lord of Avedon Hill exit the hall. Aaron directed the staff to pull chairs away from the table and sit facing him. Aramis walked over and stood in front of the staff. Kel is not here.
No. He spent most of the day with Gloria Platt. He is probably at his home now, or sleeping in his cot near the Avedon family cemetery.
Aramis doubted Kel was sleeping underground tonight, especially after Greta's body had been taken. Aramis addressed the entire group. My name is Aramis Cragan. As Blake or the constables have certainly told you by now, I and my student Aaron have been tasked with discovering who or what gained entry into Avedon Manor and its courtyard and murdered Greta Platt. One of the ladies paled at his choice of words. I am a monk of the Aronic Order and a retired Aronic advisor. I care not who is highborn or low. Your position here at the manor matters not to me. I only care for the truth, to uncover who committed this vile act. You will help me. You all knew Greta Platt, even if you were not her friend. You knew her better than most here at Avedon Hill. Together, we will discover what happened that night. Blake Weathertop had a disgusted look on his face. The four others looked at each other, and then back to Aramis. Aramis looked at the two women sitting beside each other, and then to his notes. Brianna Ray and Allie Moore?
I'm Allie Moore, sir.
Both of the women were attractive and young. Based on descriptions of Greta Platt, Lord Avedon had clearly made an effort to surround himself with pleasing-looking women, and Allie looked to be the more assertive of the two maids. You were upstairs when Lord Avedon shouted that night, correct? All eyes focused on the young maid.
Yes. I was dusting along the main upstairs hallway when I heard the shout. Then I heard Constable Ulrich running. Saw him at the top of the stairs. It looked like he didn't know where the sound came from, for sure. I pointed down, where I thought the shout came from, and he ran.
What did you do then?
I didn't know what to do. I must have frozen for I don't know how long. But then, since I was near Richard Avedon's bedroom, I thought he should know.
He's the oldest son. Allie nodded.
I knew all of the children were in their rooms and that Lord Avedon had not come up for bed. I didn't know until later that it was Lord Avedon that had screamed. I woke up Sir Richard, and he ran over to his brother's room.
Brother? Which brother?
Edward. He went into Edward's room. After that, I figured he would take care of the other family members, so I went down the servant stairs back to the kitchens.
Brianna Ray broke in.
I was in the main kitchen, sitting at a table, talking to one of the manor guards. Rock is his name.
Her eyes seemed to twinkle at the mention of Rock's name.
Ellie came running in, talking about a scream from somewhere in the manor. Rock, me, Allie, went together and eventually found everyone in the courtyard. Poor Greta.
No one in the kitchens heard Lord Avedon shout. Brianna replied.
Rock heard something. But there is a lot of background noise in the kitchens. Ovens blazing, pots being scrubbed. No one was sure of anything until Allie came down.
Aramis looked at his notes. Lee. A boy of 12 or 13 sitting beside Chef Roland stood up.
Me, sir. Lee Nallen. I'm Chef Roland's assistant.
Aaron asked. You're a bit young to be a chef's assistant, aren't you? Chef Roland pulled Lee back down into his chair.
It helps that he is my son. He washes dishes, mostly, Master Aaron.
Aramis kept writing. And you, Roland, where were you during this time?
I had cooked the last dinners for the evening and had moved to the back kitchen, cutting vegetables and getting things prepped for the next morning's meal. I didn't hear anything, really.
And you, Blake, where were you? Aramis watched as the butler wrinkled his nose.
I was given leave to go home early that day. I had been here late several evenings in a row, and the housemistress was kind enough to let me go home just before sundown. I have a house near the town gate.
Do you live with anyone? A snicker escaped from Allie Moore. Blake shot a nasty glare in her direction.
I live alone, Sir Aramis. I have never been married.
Aaron, in particular, had reached the end of his patience with the butler. So what happens when you retire? You said the Weathertop family has served the Avedons for generations.
I am still young enough to have children, Master Aaron. I plan on taking a long vacation sometime to find me a wife. You might say the prospects here are less than appealing.
Aramis looked over to his charge. He didn't want Aaron to let Blake's personality get the best of him. The point is, no one saw you that night. Blake, silenced, shook his head no. Aramis changed the subject. Do any of you know of anyone that had problems with Greta, either personally or professionally? No one said anything, but Aramis sensed a change in Chef Roland's demeanor. He made eye contact with the chef before moving on. Once more, was there anything about her job or her personal life that you think I should know about? Anything that might help us with our investigation? Allie looked around everyone else and then spoke.
We would all like to help you, Master Aramis, but Miss Greta was the housemistress. She might have been manor staff, but she wasn't one of us, if you understand my meaning. Whatever was her business wasn't any of ours, that's for sure.
Everyone other than Blake Weathertop nodded. He sat motionless, just waiting for the interview to come to an end. And did any of you on that day or on any other day see anyone in or around the manor that didn't belong, seemed out of place, especially around the courtyard? Brianna raised her hand.
One day I saw Jilly Hemming sitting in the courtyard by herself. She was crying.
Allie Moore pulled Brianna's hand down.
Oh, that's not so strange. They were friends. Miss Greta would have Jilly Hemming over lots of times. Not so much in the past couple of years, but she was always welcome here at the manor.
No, Brianna, thank you. Even if it doesn't mean anything, that is exactly the type of information we need. After writing a bit more in his notebook, Aramis placed it in a pocket of his robe. Thank you all very much. We will most likely speak to each of you individually in the days to come. They all stood and began walking away. Remember, we only seek justice here. We are not here to get any of you into trouble with Lord Avedon. So if you can think of anything at all, please let us know. Blake Weathertop ended his silence.
Unless you think one of us was involved, then we'll be in plenty of trouble with Lord Avedon.
Not waiting for a response, Blake walked out of the Grand Hall. Aaron whispered, I've got my sights set on that one, Master. Aramis looked around at the others in the room. Once he was sure no one was looking, he flashed a hand signal to Aaron, who immediately followed after Blake. Aramis moved quickly and stopped Chef Roland before he could leave the hall. I would like to speak to you about tomorrow's menu, if I could. After a few moments, Aramis felt comfortable speaking to the chef. Roland, was there something you wanted to tell me? Chef Roland had a confused look on his face.
What do you mean?
What did you want to say about Blake? The man looked down at the ground for a moment.
Nothing, really, Sir Aramis. I just wanted to say that Blake Weathertop never liked Greta much, or any of the Platts for that matter. He has always been jealous of the Platt family. Even now, he is trying to get in Lord Avedon's business, trying to do things that only the housemistress is supposed to do. He is really the only person that might profit from Greta's death.
But Gloria Platt said something about her niece eventually coming here to take over as housemistress. If this is the case, how will Blake Weathertop profit?
All I can say is that Miss Celine, who should be the next housemistress, she isn't here right now, is she, Sir Aramis?
With that, Chef Roland exited the hall, heading towards the kitchens. Aramis sat down at the table and waited for Aaron's return. Aramis waited longer than expected. Eventually, Aaron re-entered the grand hall. He approached and sat down beside Aramis. Blake went down the hallway we came up before. He opened one of the doors along the hallway and went through. I listened to the door, but did not go in. It looked to be a room and not another hallway. I then went outside and looked around the front of the manor for a time. Finally, Blake came out the main door of the mansion, cloak over his shoulders, and walked down the path towards the gate. I guess he was done for the day. Did he see you? Aaron nodded. Yes. However, I was far enough away from the door and searching through some bushes, like I was looking for something in particular. I don't think he realized I had followed him out. It does not matter. While Lord Avedon's chef believes that Blake might be the type of person who would kill to get ahead, I just do not see it. Aaron nodded, but looked like he still hoped Blake was somehow involved. Not evil enough? No, not brave enough, and not smart enough to get away with it. They both stood and moved the chairs back under the table. So, are you ready? Where to now? Aramis walked towards the door they had entered earlier during the day, on their way to the courtyard. Time to do some exploring. Is this such a good idea? Do not worry, Aaron. Just let me do the talking if we are discovered. The guard that had been stationed outside the Grand Hall during the morning was no longer there. Aramis was reasonably sure the two guards that should be on duty inside the manor were making their rounds, but had no idea where they might be. Along the hallway, there were several doors they had passed earlier that day. Now they took the time to listen at each one. This is the one. Aaron had a quizzical look on his face. Aramis replied, more airflow around the bottom of the door. Aramis opened the door, the third one they had reached. They could see another hallway, but this one widened and eventually reached a set of stairs leading up to the second floor. The hallway continued past the stairs, but the second floor was Aramis's intended destination. The landing at the top of the stairs opened up into a rather large room. It was most likely the main gathering place for the children during the day or evening. There were desks and books along one of the walls, and comfortable furniture in the center of the room. There was even a practice area for fencing in one corner. It's very quiet up here, Aramis. Where is everyone? I do not know, but let's go this way. To the left side of the great room, a hallway exited to the east. As they entered the hallway, they ran into Brianna Ray, who was sweeping the floor.
Sir Aramis, you aren't supposed to be up here, are you?
Aramis looked past Brianna and saw three doors along the south side of the northernmost hallway, and a fourth door at the end of the corridor. Just following up on Allie's description of events, you can help us, my dear. Brianna began shaking her head from side to side, mouth hanging slightly open.
I don't think that I should be doing that, Sir Aramis.
Aramis took the broom from Brianna's hands and passed it back to Aaron. Aaron here will sweep for you. You can come with me. He turned her and began leading her down the hall.
Oh, sir, please be very quiet. Lord Abaddon and some of the children are in their rooms.
Aramis looked at the doors along the corridor. The door at the end of the hall. That's Lord Abaddon's room. Brianna nodded. And these doors. Brianna pointed to the door closest to Lord Abaddon's room.
Julienne, the youngest.
Aramis heard a short whistle from behind him, coming from Aaron's direction. Aramis did not have time to turn as Brianna pointed to each door, heading back towards the great room.
John, Edward, Karen,
and Richard.
A gasp escaped from Brianna's mouth as she found herself facing Richard Avedon, Lord Avedon's oldest son. Aramis looked past Richard at Aaron, still holding the broom, mouth in position for a second whistle.
Brianna, you should go.
There was no mistaking Richard Avedon's tone. Brianna, stuttering and stammering, started in one direction, then ran in the other towards Aaron. She nearly knocked Aaron down, grabbing her broom. She continued on to the back of the great room to a door that Aramis assumed led to the staircase the staff used. Richard Avedon did not look much like his father. From the portraits Aramis had studied along the entry halls earlier that day, Richard took after his mother. Aramis told him as much.
My mother died when I was 13. I may look like her, but I'd rather have her here so I could try to be like her. I'll never know how much of her is really in me.
There was unmistakable pain in Richard, but Aramis sensed a strength as well. I did not mean to offend Sir Richard. I just had an opportunity to study some of your family portraits and noted the resemblance. He shrugged off the apology.
Why are you up here? If you had not been with Brianna, people around here seem to trust you, but do not forget who you are and who we are. Wandering the hallway outside the unprotected rooms of Lord Avedon's children, people have been put to death in Groge for less, no?
Richard Avedon referred to the nature of government within Groge. While Yu is ruled by its royal family, with different levels of dukes and counts and mayors governing the districts, cities, and towns of the province under the ultimate direction of King Renoir Perti, Groge was a different story. While Galen Avedon was just beginning to tunnel his way through Mount Olviar, several thieves' guild masters were working together to form a shadow government that eventually became known as the Council of Groge. To this day, every city or town in Groge has its own ruler, but all, including Lord Avedon, answer in some way to the current Council of Groge. The method of self-rule adopted by the council created a propensity for different laws, varying definitions of crimes, and different levels of punishment, all dependent on where one was. While trespassing might call for the punishment of death in some areas of Groge, Aramis doubted that was the case in Avedon Hill. Aramis knew that Richard Avedon was only probing and not threatening him. Sir Richard, your father asked us to investigate this murder. He did ask us not to cause you or your siblings any more pain than you already have endured. But we are just following up on some things that Allie Moore told us earlier. Maybe you can help us fill in the gaps. Richard sighed.
As long as we are quiet, Julianne is already asleep for the evening.
Of course. Aaron had moved over to join them, and after introducing Aaron to Richard, Aramis continued. Allie said she was dusting along this hall when she heard your father call out. With Richard nodding, Aramis continued. Now, how could she hear the shout from here, when others downstairs either did not hear the shout or couldn't tell where the shout came from? Richard smiled.
That's an easy one.
He pointed to the northern side of the hall, where the doors were.
Bedrooms behind those doors.
He then pointed to the opposite wall, the southern wall of the corridor.
And behind that wall, what do you think?
Aaron's internal compass may have been compromised in the confusion of the labyrinth under the manor and mountain, but he was able to see the layout of the manor in his head. The courtyard. Richard turned and nodded to Aaron.
Yes. The walls of the courtyard reach to the top of the manor, and the northern wall of the courtyard is on the other side of this wall.
He continued, smiling. You enjoy talking about the manor.
Avedon Manor is an architectural wonder. You have seen the courtyard, how the manor was constructed around the entrance to the Olviaran Pass. You have even seen the catacombs underneath the manor. There are many elements here that cannot be found in any other building in Cairn, and it was built over 300 years ago.
Aramis had pulled out his notebook again and was writing furiously. Allie said she went to your room and knocked.
Yes, that is correct. I was sleeping and did not hear my father shout. I heard Allie knock, and it took me a moment to get dressed and get to the door. While she was knocking, she hadn't said anything, so I didn't know what was going on. She looked a bit frightened, not because she knew what had happened, but because she was alone and didn't know. She told me she had heard a shout and that Constable Ulrich had come up the stairs and that she had directed him back down again.
Aramis walked towards the third door along the corridor. Allie said you went directly to your brother Edvard's room. Here? Before Aramis could reach Edvard's bedroom door, Richard Avedon barred his advance.
Yes, I went to Edvard's room first. I gathered the other children after that.
We met John earlier today. A great rider, is he not?
Yes, John is a wonderful horseman.
You said Julien is asleep. Where are Edvard and, Karen?
Karen is probably downstairs in the kitchens. She told me a little while ago that she was hungry. Julien takes an early dinner and goes to her room around sundown while most of us eat later. Karen likes to eat all the time, it seems, and Edvard is in his room.
You did not say that before.
I didn't say he wasn't in his room either. I only said Julien was asleep, and that was why I wanted you to be quiet. Edvard has been sick, I'm afraid. He's had a fever for a couple of days now. He is in his room resting right now.
Aramis nodded. I am sorry to hear that. Might we meet him? We just want everyone to get used to our faces around here. Richard held out his arm.
No, Sir Aramis, you may not. If his fever breaks tonight as we expect, then he should be up and around tomorrow, and you can meet him then. He always seems to get sick for a couple of days when the weather changes.
Aramis looked into Richard's eyes, searching for something. That will be fine. Richard lowered his arm.
Unless, of course, you would like me to get my father. I believe he is in his room as well.
Oh, no, that is not necessary at all. Aramis moved back down the corridor and into the great room. And you did not go into the courtyard?
Not until much later. Only after Constable Ulrich came up and told me what had happened.
Aramis studied his notes for more than a few moments. Richard finally asked,
Is that all for now? I was on my way downstairs when I heard your voices in the hallway.
The monk looked up and smiled. Just a cup. Richard was clearly agitated, but nodded. Aramis tapped his notebook with his pen. When Allie told you about the shout and about directing Ulrich downstairs, you knew then that the shout had to come from the courtyard, correct?
I suspected as much, considering where she had been cleaning at the time.
And yet you did not rush down to see what was going on. Richard crossed his arms in front of him.
My responsibility is to my brothers and sisters first. I knew the guards were downstairs. I had to make sure everyone was safe here.
Richard looked back down the corridor behind Richard, towards the bedrooms. That makes sense. Thank you for your time, Sir Richard.
Let me show you out.
Richard led them down the stairs and to the front of the manor. Aramis had put his notebook back in his pocket, and all remained silent during the walk. Aaron did slow down once or twice to look closely at the Avedon family portraits, since the children had been discussed. He noted that Edvard Avedon looked much more like Lord Avedon than any of the other Avedon children. After Aramis and Aaron had walked through the door, Richard started to close the door behind them. It was now completely dark outside.
I'm sure we'll speak again tomorrow, Sir Aramis.
Yes, thank you again. Actually, one more question. I'm sorry. Just thinking out loud here. Richard stopped the door. Only his head could be seen in the darkened doorway.
Yes.
Why, Edvard?
Come again?
Aramis smiled, even though Richard probably couldn't see his face in the darkness. You skipped Karen's bedroom and went directly to Edvard's room first. I was just wondering why you did not check on Karen first. The darkness hid Richard's face as well, but Aramis didn't need to see it to understand that Richard was on the defensive. After a few moments of silence, Richard finally responded.
I don't really... Well, to tell you the truth, it was just instinct. Edvard is the next in line after me, even though Karen is older. And even though Karen's room is closest to mine, Edvard is the first sibling I think of in situations like that.
Richard closed the door before Aramis had a chance to thank him again for his time. For the first time since their arrival, Aramis was beginning to feel a real chill in the air, Winter is coming fast, young Aaron. The two men started walking towards the manor gates. We're going to have trouble with him, too, aren't we? We shall see. We shall see. Hungry? There is some venison cooking for us right now. My nose is tingling. Aaron doubted that his teacher's nose was actually tingling. I just want to get off my feet. Maybe John will let us borrow one of his horses tomorrow. Come, lad. You will feel much better tomorrow. This is good exercise. Yes, master. Aramis laughed as they walked back to the Avedon Hill Inn.
Shirabi had it all.
126-90! If the championship game has ever seen a shellacking like that before, I've never heard of it.
Athletic achievement, good looks.
You think that was good? Wait till tonight.
And the love of his life, Rebecca.
I'm a lover, not a fighter.
Bex and I are going to try to get approved as the start of a new breeding cell.
But Daniel and his friends are members of the Psi Collective, the Worldwide Brotherhood of Telepaths. And they're about to find out that the needs of the many...
Every population is limited by the number of fertile wombs available.
What if our powers aren't strong enough? What if they decide we aren't good enough to qualify for the breeding cells?
Outweigh the needs of the few.
Your powers aren't strong enough. We do not need low-powered males to become fathers.
Shh. It's okay.
No, it's not. They're going to send you away from me.
Now... As the collective prepares for a gangland war against its greatest enemy...
All of us may soon be dead.
Look sharp. Trouble's coming.
A telepathic prodigy becomes a pawn in the struggle for power.
Scary. How strong do you think she is?
One of the strongest I've seen.
Daniel and his friends must decide whose side they're on.
I can't believe he didn't tell you.
Malcolm Ardvalos, the vampire prince?
Elder, I would like to invoke the right of bounty.
Shoot to kill.
My God, what have you done?
And how far they're willing to go, or how much they're willing to change to keep what they love.
Hi, I'm Danny. Danny Shirabi.
Never thought of that, did you?
Metamore City, Making the Cut, is the first novel in the world of Metamore City, written by Chris Lester. Featuring a full voice cast, sound effects, and music to bring the story off the page and into your ears.
Brilliant.
Available exclusively on the Metamore City podcast. Tune in on Sunday, December 30th, 2007, and be there for the beginning.
Sounds perfect.
Metamore City, Making the Cut. Family has its price.
I made a deal.
I didn't.
www.metamorecity.com. That's metamorecity.com.
Mike's Hot Dish. Rock.
And I gotta get it on my chest. What the biggest, the best, better than the rest.
Pop.
Never know what Mike will cook up in his next pot of Mike's Hot Dish.
Come and see what's on the menu at the next generation of radio.com.
Next generation of radio.com.
You've been listening to Murder at Avedon Hill, a podcast novel written and performed by the author. Please visit pgholyfield.com for more information on this novel and the author. Most of the music in this podcast provided by Shira Common through magnatune.com. Magnatune.com, they are not evil. Additional music generously provided by Kevin McLeod through incompetech.com. This podcast is copyright 2007. P.G. Holyfield, and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 2.5 license.